Welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Friday, May 24th. It is Memorial Day weekend, so in honor of that, we are going to have our interview with Kelvin Hopkins, the Army quarterback. We're also going to bring to you the rest of the Pac-12 review. We just have to finish up the South. We brought Max back on. He's going to give us all his input. So let us know what you guys think about what we said about the South. It's going to be a shorter episode today than normal. Next week, we'll be back full-fledged. We'll be doing the SEC East next week, followed by, obviously, the West. So before we get to that, we're going to talk about SeatGeek real quick. This episode is also brought to you guys by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is an easy alternative for buying tickets to see your favorite team play. The best part about SeatGeek is while you're on the app, you can tell if the tickets you are buying are a good deal or not. Sections highlighted in green indicate that you have a good deal. If they're in red, you might be paying a little too high for the selected seats. But you know what else is a good deal on SeatGeek? Using code CFBTD at checkout to get $20 off your first purchase. Use code CFBTD at checkout for $20 off your first purchase. It's the Colorado Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High.
All right, so we're here with Army quarterback Kelvin Hopkins. First of all, we want to thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Also, we want to congratulate you on this past season. I believe it was the first 11-win season in Army history, but if it wasn't, regardless, it was a great season by you guys.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was the first 11-win season. A lot of hard work to get there, but it was definitely one to remember.
Yeah, I can imagine so. So we're going to jump right into the questions here. A lot of people are wondering, including me since I was young. So can you walk us through like a typical day of like a student athlete at the Service Academy?
Oh, yeah. Just a typical day, just your basic Tuesday. Wake up to around 6:30, 6:20. Just depends on what you got to do to get ready in the morning. Formation for everyone, all students, is at roughly about 6:50, 6:45 in the morning. And then from there, you can either go to breakfast, or just go straight to class. If you got a 7:30, that's when the first class block starts. 7:30 to 11:55 roughly is classes. So it's kind of like, I don't know if like you had a high school schedule, like A day, B day.
Yeah.
It's kind of structured the same way, where you have one set of classes on the first day, one set of classes on the second day, and they alternate. So you do that from around 7:30 till 11:50, then lunch till about 12:30. Everybody eats in the mess hall together. So all 4,000 students in the core, we're all in the mess hall at one time eating lunch. Then depending on the day, you might have classes afterwards or a brief or meeting where everybody has to attend or different classes have to attend. And then from there, for us in season, it just turns into football from there. Practice, meetings, dinner, study hall, and then back to our rooms. All that before roughly 10:30, 11.
All right. So we actually just last week tweeted out something along the lines of best rivalry in football. And a lot of the replies were the Army-Navy game. And you've played in a few of them now. So can you give us, like, what's it like to play in that game?
Playing the Army-Navy, I mean, it's special. It's just so much history and so much going on around the game. It starts really on probably that Sunday night of the week of the game. You know, it's just so much hype and so much energy around it. So many things going around on campus and people you don't normally see come to visit and want to talk to you and talk about the game and how much it means to them. So it's definitely just a special event. But the game itself is always interesting. It really doesn't matter what the records are of either the team or who's doing well or who's playing how, whatever. Anybody can win that game because it's a dogfight, and a lot of those guys, both sides, probably, you know, won't get to play many games like that ever again. So, you know, a lot of guys go all out and play to the best of their ability and play great games, and it's just fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, and we're somewhat local, so, I mean, I've gone up to Army, I think, three or four times I've gone up, including last year, but – you know, walking around campus, even outside the stadium, you see all over, it's like, go Army, beat Navy. So, you know, when you guys first get there, that's like the game for you guys, right? Like, you want to beat Navy.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the first things you learn. Just coming here as a student, everything you do, you just got beat Navy. It's chants and cheers and all the stuff that they teach you early on about beating Navy and things like that. But, you know, everybody wants to win as many games as possible. And you know, there aren't many games that are more important than the next one or the one that you got that week. But Army-Navy is definitely one of those ones you look at on the schedule and get excited for.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially with that atmosphere. So we're going to give you a little time here, just like almost like, I guess, promote yourself right here. So what would you say to, you know, high school students that are considering going to Army or going to another one of the service academies? What would you say to them if they're, you know, if they're on the ledge right now? What kind of boost would you give them to sway towards going to one of the academies?
I'd say, you know, if you're a competitor, if you like to challenge yourself, if you like to reach new heights as an individual and see what you're really about and what you're made of as a person, I'd say go to service academy. You know, there's a lot of times where you're challenged from all different types of things in your life, whether it be personal, academics, military, or even football, where, you know, it really tests your character and you get to see who you are and what you're made of. So if that's somebody that would challenge excites you and you want to take hold of that and be great about it, then definitely come to a military academy and enjoy the process and reap the benefits of doing so.
You know, it almost got me ready to go right now just by saying that. this is kind of like a two-part question here. We ask a lot of the guys this, you know, what is the biggest difference between the level of play in high school and college, but also not along with just play, just like everyday life. So, you know, go into like the difference between play where you were in high school to Army, and then just the difference of school and the life around it with now where you are at Army.
Okay, I'm gonna start with football wise. Just football wise, the biggest difference between college and high school is just the level of preparation it takes, both from the mental side of the game, so game plans and being focused in. I feel like what they're gonna throw at you and what you've seen and everything's more fluid, so you got to be subject to change and play well with it. Also, I'd say from the taking care of yourself side, high school, I feel like, you know, everybody thinks they're invincible back in high school. You can play one game and then be ready to play another one on the day afterwards, or, you know, practice is easy, but college, you really got to take care of your body. Like, it's really strong guys, I mean, out there, and then, you know, they like to hit. So, you know, just taking care of your body, getting in the training room as much as possible and staying stretched and actually, you know, investing in yourself rather than just, you know, always wanting to put junk in your body and skip the training room just to get a little bit extra sleep and things like that.
Yeah, and just because you just said, you know, everyone's out there and they're ready to hit. Like a stigma, what's weird with all the academies, you know, because you guys are on the option, a lot of people look at your line and they're like, oh, they're not big. I can tell from, you know, one of my best friends actually played against you guys last year at Lafayette, and I made the trip up. And he texted me the next day, and he was like, dude, I've never been more sore in my body. He was like, those guys hit, and they hit hard. He's like, they're stronger than anyone we played. So for anyone listening right now who thinks that, you know, this might be like a walk-on game, like, I've always said Army is one of the toughest teams to play, especially – like, playing Army goes into your next week because of how physical you guys are and because of the offense you guys run. So I think there was a couple years ago, there was a stat where, like, teams who played Army the following week were, I think, below 500 because of the wear and tear you guys put on the other team.
Yeah. I mean, that's Army football. You know, we pride ourselves on being tough guys and you know, we may not be the strongest, may not be the fastest, may not be the most athletic, but you know, you better come ready to fight because we're going to give all we got and go hard from snap to whistle.
Yeah, that's one thing. So here, the last thing we got here, I don't know if you got a little briefing on this. We do a little quiz at the end with all of our guests. We're going to give you 10 schools. You're going to give us the nickname. So, like, for example, if I said Army, you would say, you know, you guys would say Knights. So we're just going to go by the nickname. So we already did this with Jared Patterson, who's a Buffalo. He got 6 out of 10 right. You know, this ranges everywhere from the Power Fives to the Group of Fives all around. So just tell me when you're ready. I'm going to rattle them off and just whatever comes to your head.
Okay.
All right. We're going to start with BYU.
Cougars.
Yep. University of Alabama, Birmingham.
Dragons.
That's close. The Blazers. I always thought they're the Dragons too, but they're the Blazers. Auburn.
Tigers.
Yep. University of Central Florida.
Knights.
Yep. Boston College.
Eagles.
Yep. East Carolina.
Pirates.
Fresno State.
Bulldogs.
Iowa.
Terriers.
No. You were good with the Bulldogs. I'll give you that one.
What was the next one?
Iowa.
Hawkeyes.
Yep. Kansas.
Jayhawks.
And it's probably the most difficult one. Coastal Carolina.
Oh, Chanticleers.
Wow. That's impressive. You knew that one.
Yeah, my best friend plays for Coastal Carolina.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah. That makes sense then. So I think you got 9 out of 10, actually.
Yeah.
Awesome. That goes right over Jared. That's going to be a hard mark to beat. All right, Kelvin. Thanks for coming on again, man. Best of luck for the upcoming season. We'll probably make a trip up because we're only about an hour away. But best of luck. Hope you guys go out and win more games than last year.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Hey, man. Thanks again.
Yep.
All right. So before we get to the Pac-12 South, we want to welcome back Max Torres. He was on with us last week doing the North. Welcome back, Max. Thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks again for having me. Excited to talk some more Pac-12 football.
So just like last week, we'll have you started off since you're the guest in the show. Start us off with Utah, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, for sure. I'll start off with Utah. I have them at 8-4 right now. I think they're the favorite by most analysts at this point to win the Pac-12 South. They return a lot of key pieces to their offense, mainly in dual-threat quarterback Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss, who was dinged up for a little bit last year. As well as four pass catchers that had at least 15 receptions. So they're really good at distributing the ball on their offense. And their defensive line is usually the strength of their defense, and their defense comes to play and is always solid. So I think that they'll probably be the favorite to win the South this year.
I think I have them repeating as well. I have them going 9-5, I think. But I think that they lose four of their top tacklers on defense. So I'm a little concerned about that. Like, I think they leave the door open for another team, which won't be USC. But I think that they're still going to be – they'll probably win the division.
I have – like, my thing on Utah is they have a new offensive coordinator coming in. I'm excited to see how quickly Kobe comes back from a bad knee injury last year in the Pac championship game. But they have a new line. Offensive line's going to be new this year. Zach Moss also had a knee injury, but he was a monster beforehand. The defense brings back a lot of guys, and I think they'll be good again. So I have them repeating, I believe. Yeah, I have them repeating at 9-3 with losses to Arizona, Arizona State, and Washington.
Yeah, for me with Utah, I have them also at 9-3. Their only losses are coming to Washington State, Washington, and then Arizona.
Oh, I think I said 9-5 on accident.
Yeah, I just did. I think I actually just
said, I heard that.
I meant to say 9-3. I don't know why I said 9-5.
I was like 9-5.
They're winning the division.
9-5. They're just playing everything.
Yeah. So no, they won't be 9-5. I have a 9-3.
No bye weeks. All right. So anyone else got anything on Utah before we jump on down?
It's better.
All right. So let's do Arizona next, because I have something that might shock you guys here. So for Arizona, I have them actually at 2-10.
Oh,
wow.
That is very shocking.
And I think that even though they have Khalil Tate, and I think their running back, Taylor, probably one of the best running backs in the Pac-12, I just don't think – I mean, last year they tried to turn Khalil Tate into a pocket passer, and he really struggled, although they didn't struggle that much against Oregon. But they did struggle at times, and I think that this year they will struggle more because their one receiver got drafted, and he was a lot of jump balls. He was, I think, 6'5". I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but yeah, I think they struggle a lot this season.
See, I have them 7-5, but
like what you kind of just said with Khalil Tate, how they tried to make him into a player that he's not. I think that if they put him back in the pocket and don't let him move, I think that someone could be on the hot seat, because you're basically given a guy who 2 years ago, or going into last year, a lot of people talked about for a Heisman. And in essence, they kind of ruined the kid, because they were like, we're going to make you play in a completely different play style that you've never played before. So their offensive line comes back. Their defense trends in the right direction going into this year. But I think 7-5 probably is about where I think's right. Arizona State, Utah, Oregon, Stanford, and Colorado sums up the losses. But if they do keep Tate in the pocket and don't let him move, I think we could see Kevin Sumlin getting into a little hot seat situation.
Yeah, I also have them going in 7-5. Like you mentioned, Tate comes back, but we don't really know how much of an advantage that is, depending on how he's going to be used offensively. JJ Taylor is just super, super good. I think he'll do big things for their offense this year. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Braden Schuler, brother of Braden Schuler, who plays for Oregon, he returns. He had 21.5 tackles for loss last year. So he's going to anchor that defense. And I think that since the second year under someone, that the defense should take a step forward, hopefully. And they have a really easy start to their schedule. They could start off 5-0, potentially. I have them losing one of those games. And I think that they have a brutal stretch in mid to late October between UW, USC, and Stanford. And I think they win at least one of those games.
Yeah, for Arizona, I also have them with a losing record, not as severe as John's, but I have them at 5-7. Their loss is coming to Hawaii, UCLA, Colorado, Washington, USC, Stanford, and Oregon. So in the middle of their schedule, I have them losing 5 in a row. It's a tough stretch, but like you said, with Tate, they're trying to make him into a quarterback that he's not. They got to play to his strengths, and his strength is to be a mobile quarterback, not a strict pocket passer.
I just don't think Hawaii has the defense to win that game.
No, but they have Cole McDonald, who's a
player. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
All right. So one thing, Max. Best thing about winning the best thing about living on the East Coast is you get football to like 2 or 3 in the morning, like with Hawaii games.
Oh yeah.
Oh god, that just seems like the worst.
No, it's great. Like Saturday nights, the football never ends. Like
I actually
wake up and the NFL's on. Like
I'm gonna propose an idea now, and this is the first time anyone's hearing it. So I think I might have brought it up to a couple of my buddies. So John and Mike, Max, I know you're on the West Coast, so it's gonna be hard for you to join in with us, but we'd love to have you join in. I want to do on the first week college football, start at the 12 o'clock games and do a 24-hour stretch of college football. I know Barstool did it last year. And once that Hawaii game ends, there's like a 40-minute break, and then Japanese college football starts.
Jeez.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Wait, Max, did you use Reddit at all?
No, I don't. I feel like I should be on it, though.
Oh, yeah, you should be. Like, I post a lot in the college football thing, but yeah, like the Japanese college football games, like they make game threads and people go nuts for them. Like,
That's it. Week one, 24 hours consecutive of college football. So, John and Mike, if you guys are in, let's do
Maybe
it.
Maybe they should move Oregon State into like the Japanese college football conference.
They should.
Them and Rutgers.
Them and Rutgers.
Yeah.
All right. So, where are we going to now? Oh, I think we got to do. Oh, we skipped right over USC in the list of orderings. I have things. Max, you want to start us off USC?
Yeah, sure. Oh, man. USC. It's such a great relationship with them. I have them going 6-6, which might be a little bit generous considering what a dumpster fire their program is right now. However, I'm going to look at the positives first. You have some new coaches there that Clay Helton hired to potentially save his job, having one of the hottest seats in football probably, mainly in Graham Harrell at OC, which they're hoping is going to be the answer to JT Daniels' woes last year, making it more pass-heavy. You have a lot of talent on the roster, as USC always does, coming from LA, mainly in Amon-Ra St. Brown, Devin Williams, and Pele Gote, who won the Buckus Award as the nation's best linebacker. So And JT Daniels, excuse me, is coming back, so you'll have some consistency at a QB. But this has just been such an underwhelming and underachieving program in the past couple of years. I don't know how they're gonna build this year. It's really hard to tell.
So I have the first thing I have written down for predictions. I think that Clay Helton will be relieved of his duties by week five.
Mid-season.
Yeah, I actually have them either starting off 0-5 or 1-4. Fresno State's the only game that they might win, but I think Fresno State's that's a tough team. I think Fresno State might give them a game. If they lose to Fresno State, they have a bye week October 5th. Helton will be out of there by then. And then we're talking Urban Meyer watch. Just throwing that out there.
Stop it. Stop it.
I've been saying that since Urban, quote-unquote, retired. But, yeah, like you said, Daniel should progress more. They definitely have to get some kind of run game. They haven't had any kind of running offense, really. Defense wasn't that great. Losing Kingsbury, even though he was there for, like, a week and a half.
Like, well, he stopped by. He didn't even, like...
Yeah, he barely even signed his name on the contract before he left. But I have them at 500, 6-6. I have them after firing Helton, turning it around, and having a good second half of the season.
Do you think they fire him like Lane Kiffin style, like on the runway? Like
on the runway? I think they just – let me look at their schedule real quick because I think I know how they'll do it.
All right, hold on. Max, so is it a lot easier to write for the Pac-12, like mostly Oregon, when you don't have to pronounce any of these names? Like –
I guess. I mean, Oregon definitely recruits more recently a lot of Polynesian players, so those names can get pretty tough. But
yeah, so some of these names are tough. Like, I was reading a USC and like Oregon's roster, and all of these like Hawaiian, like Polynesian names. I was like, wow, like I don't even know how to start this.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, but it's cool because I think we've seen recently that Polynesians have been really crucial in the trenches for these teams to be successful. I mean, we saw it with Oregon last year with Penei Sewell, the true freshman All-American at left tackle. He was, you know, probably their best lineman at the time that he went down during the UW game, and then the team just kind of sputtered, and I think he was definitely their most important freshman last year.
He's probably my favorite Oregon lineman besides Dallas Warmack, a big Warmack fan.
So back to your question real quick, John. How do you think I'm going to fire them?
Okay.
They play at Washington before the bye week. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Washington Stadium is on the river, right?
Uh-huh.
I think, this is a little bold, Clay Helton wakes up in the middle of the night on a floating bed in the river, and USC has gone back, and they left him there.
Oh my God!
So how did he end up in the river? Like,
they put him there when he was sleeping.
Take the bed out of the hotel all the way to the river.
Mm-hmm. And they paid for the replacement bed out of his contract.
So funny thing about that is, I have in my notes, I have Clay Helton is a lame duck, like, you know, saying he's gonna get fired. So if he's in the river, he's actually a duck.
He's actually a duck.
Yeah. All right. So the next team, we have a UCLA. Who wants to start this one?
Ooh, I'd be down to start this one.
All right, let's go.
Seeing that Chip Kelly is there. So I have them going 4-8, coming off a pretty bad year last year with Chip Kelly's first year in LA. We have the return of Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the quarterback, which is always a good thing for a team, along with Joshua Kelly and Theo Howard, who both had really good years last year. But you do need to replace Caleb Kelly, the amazing tight end they had last year. I think that with Kelly having another year to work with this team, I think the offense should take steps forward. But when it comes to last year, I think that one of their bigger problems was defense, giving up about 30 points a game, 200 yards every game on the ground. And their defense wasn't really putting too much pressure on the quarterback. They only had 15 sacks all year. So I think if their defense can take a step forward, that'll be a sign of improvement. But I'm not expecting big things from UCLA by any means.
Yeah, I have UCLA sitting at 4-8. They did start slow last year with Chip Kelly, but they actually played well for the remainder of the season. They played in a decent amount of close games. They need good line production this year. The defense needs to, you know, like you said, defense needs to step up, but it also, like, wasn't a terrible defense. It wasn't as bad as, like, Oregon State, and it wasn't as good as Cal. It was, like, a middle-of-the-road defense. But they have a tough schedule, like, especially at a conference. Like, they're at Cincinnati. Cincinnati beat them last year. Oklahoma is obviously going to be a tough game. So that could be two out-of-conference losses right there. So I haven't, like I said, I haven't 4-8.
For me, with UCLA, I have them at 5-7. I don't really see that great of a year. Chip Kelly is Chip Kelly. There's no words to describe the man. He had a terrible season last year. He was supposed to go in there and lead these guys into the top 25 ranking right away and just tear it up in the Pac-12. And he just disappointed.
So, yeah, but didn't he, like, overnight get a much better recruiting class when he first got hired?
No, he got a better recruiting class, but it just didn't, like, show on the field.
Well, I know. But I'm just saying, like, he's making moves. I mean, he had a good class his first year.
All right, can I add one more thing on UCLA real quick?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like when Chip Kelly, you know, took over there, I think that's definitely a selling point for offensive recruits. Like, yeah, like, he's what put Oregon on the map offensively. Like, come play for me. And they're still one of the, you know, they're an LA school, so they have all this amazing talent right in their backyard, but their recruiting's been pretty underwhelming. And I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm pretty sure that they try to boast that they're, like, the most exclusive football offer in the entire nation. So you're not going to get recruits if you're not offering people.
I was actually going to mention that, like, since Chip Kelly's gotten to UCLA, like, I've been reading a lot that he, like, doesn't recruit almost, like. But I have them at 7-5, but I do think that they lose to California, Arizona State, Oregon, and Washington. And I think that Devin, never mind, that's a different school. Sorry, I started reading the notes for that one. I think Thompson Robinson will see a much better year this year as a second year in Chip Kelly's offense. So I have them improving.
All right, so let's make our way into the state of Arizona again. Mike, you want to start off with Arizona State?
So Arizona State, I have a very similar record to Arizona, just one less win. So I have them at 4-8 with their only wins coming to Kent State, Sacramento State, USC, and Oregon State. So in the middle of the season, they lose 6 in a row. They start off 2-0 because they have 2 cupcakes, and then they just fall off the face of the earth.
All right, Max, you want to head up with Arizona State?
Yeah, sure. So I have them going 6-6. I think people were really surprised last year when Herm Edwards came in his first year and knocked off Michigan State at the beginning of the year. I think they really built a lot of momentum from that, but kind of tailed off. Like I mentioned earlier in the pod, I really like Jaden Daniels. This 2019 recruiting class saw Arizona State signing 3 quarterbacks, so I think that's pretty interesting, and I think that quarterback competition will be one to follow. But I ultimately think Jaden Daniels ends up winning the job. I think he gets this offense back on track and helps them deal with Manny Wilkins leaving. He put up video game numbers in high school at Cajun High School. Eno Benjamin balled out last year. He's back. And I think that the defense should look pretty well with the emergence of Merlin Robinson, who was just a force to be reckoned with last year.
Like what you just said, like last year, I saw a lot of people had them around like the 6-win mark. Herm came in. They played well. They lost a quarterback, but like you said, Jaden Daniels probably going to come in. You think out of the 3 freshmen going to get the start. But I've said it before on the podcast, and I'll continue to say it. If you have 2, or in this case, 3 quarterbacks, you don't have 1 quarterback. I'm huge on like having a starter and like a clear-cut starter like day one. I think in most case scenarios, using 2 quarterbacks or 3 doesn't work. But I have Arizona State finishing the year 7-5. Losses to Arizona, Oregon, Colorado, Washington State, and I think USC beats them.
Yeah, so I actually have them also at 7-5. And I think that Eno Benjamin is probably the 3rd best running back in the Pac-12, I'd say. And I also think that Jaden Daniels is going to come in, have a good year under Herm Edwards. And I think that they lose to Oregon. And I think Washington State is going to be another one they lose to. No shockers, though. No upsets. Just a very average year.
So wait, what did you have them at? Did them 7-5 as well, right?
Yeah.
I just think like Herm had a really good year last year, especially after like hearing the early reports from when he first got there that like he didn't know he had to like actually recruit kids. Like I was kind of scared. Like what was that story? Like Herm was like confused that he had to call back a recruit and he had no idea they had to continue talks with him.
Yeah, I think it was like texting a recruit every day. He didn't like do it or something like that.
Yeah, so I was worried that like Herm wasn't going to recruit, but I think he had a good year. I think, like I said, I think that, you know, depending on the quarterback play, defense did go backwards last year compared to 2 years ago, but like we both have them 7-5. I don't think they're going to win the South, but I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the South either. I think they're going to be one of those middle of the road teams.
All right, so who wants to start Colorado?
I'll start with Colorado. Colorado is a transitioning program. They're one of those schools that are kind of on the way up here. I might pronounce his name wrong. I'm probably going to. Laviska Shenault, is that how you say it?
Shenault, but yeah.
Shenault, he had a breakout year last year. They have to replace running back position, and half of their top 10 tackles on defense have to also be replaced. So I think even though they're transitioning and I have them winning a few key games this year, I have them finishing the year at 6-6. But I did have them beating, like, you know, big win against Colorado. I mean, a big win against Washington. What else? I had a couple of big wins. So I think they'll be a better team. Yeah, big win against Arizona. I think they're going to be a good team. But, you know, they're transitioning and they're still in the middle of getting themselves to be a, you know, top-tier pack program.
Okay, so I have them going 5-7 again, but I think bringing Mel Tucker in, and they still have Steven Montez and Laviska Shenault, they'll be a very good – they'll be a fun team to watch. They just won't have the defense to win a lot of games.
Yeah, so just transitioning with Colorado here, like you guys mentioned, they're bringing in Mel Tucker, who's a former defensive coordinator at Georgia. And I think that'll be really big for turning this team around. Bringing in a defense from the SEC never hurts, since most people see them as like the best conference in the nation. But turning the defense around is what kind of catapulted this team into relevance in 2016, when they had Jim Leavitt, who was the former defensive coordinator at Oregon. And returning a quarterback is always good. And then it looks like Shenault's going to be their premier playmaker on offense. So I have them at 4-8. Not sure if I already said that, but that's kind of how I see things shaking out for them this year.
Rough year for Colorado.
For me, I actually have them at a phenomenal year. I have them at 9-3. Really? I have 9-3.
Wow.
Are you a closet Colorado Buffalo guy?
I think he is.
I am a big Colorado fan. I like the way they play. I have their only losses coming to Oregon, USC, and Utah. I don't know. Just something about these games are favorable for me. Because the first three games they start out with are Colorado State, Nebraska, and Air Force.
I cannot wait for the end of the season just to pull this podcast up again and be like, this is what you had them at, Lynn.
I hope they go like 9-3 and I get to pull up this podcast and just show it all to you guys.
Like knowing you for as long as I have, you seem like a huge Ralphie the Buffalo guy.
I have a question for you guys real quick. Are you buying into the Nebraska hype that has been building so tremendously this offseason with Scott Frost and Adrian Martinez?
No.
That is a big negative.
Yeah, I'm not really buying into it. I think they'll be better, but we talked about it last week. I think they'll be better than they were last year, but I don't see them being, you know, very good.
Didn't they lose like their first eight games? They lost like their first six or seven, right?
Yeah. I think Martinez is good, but he's a turnover machine, and they had a lot of transfers in the offseason. Like transfer out.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going to go on with Nebraska. I mean, if you lose your first six or seven last year, you really can't do much worse than that. So
you can turn it around. But you're buying into it?
I mean, I'm not buying into it now. I feel like I kind of want to because Scott Frost is an Oregon guy. But the way the Big Ten's looking, I feel like Ohio State's probably going to run through it again if Justin Fields can find his groove.
Don't count out the Nittany Lions.
Ohio State running through it.
I actually have Penn State winning the Big Ten.
Let's go.
All right. So that concludes the Pac-12 South with Max from Scoop Duck. Thank you, Max, for being on 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I'd love to come back again and talk some football with you.
All right, man, we'll keep it in mind. Maybe we'll do an end-of-the-year Pac-12 type review thing. Thanks for coming on, man.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
All right, so like I previously mentioned, that's going to be today's episode. Thanks for listening in, guys. Next week, we will start with the SEC. That'll just be me and Mike. John's going to be on a boat. So let us know what you guys think. As always, when you see our tweet for the questions, let us know what you guys want us to answer. It can be football related if you want our opinion on anything. So thanks for listening in, guys. Hope to hear from you guys soon for some feedback. See you guys next week.